Sometimes the students ask the teacher questions, and sometimes the teacher asks the students questions. Usually it's like this. It's called exams, midterms, finals. So I'm going to ask a question. I have a little note here. So my question is, everyone is looking for peace. Everyone wants to be peaceful, happy in their life. So my question is, what is the key to peace? What is the secret to having a peaceful life? This is my question. I want to hear feedback.
Maharaj, before, I think happiness meant a lot of things for me. But
no, peace. This is
peace.
Yeah, I want this. Happiness is a separate thing.
Okay. Peace. I think peace is something where you can feel within what's inside you, probably.
I want to find, what's the secret? How do you attain it? The key to it. In other words, they say the key to making money is...
The key to it, I would say, is in one term, is the bhakti. Doing some spiritual activities and getting yourself inclined towards Hare Krishna. I think that's where you can get the pure peace.
And Vinny? Vinny?
Yeah.
Vinny. Anyway, what is it? What is the key to peace? Is it Seagram's or Johnny Walker? Or what is the key to peace?
I think it's, I don't know if I'll explain it.
Moderation. Light is less. So.
And perhaps balance in life.
Can you repeat that? You said that peace is balance?
Probably moderation, though. It's personally, I don't like going to extremes.
Moderation.
Moderation in anything. In the way we live.
The middle way.
Yes. That's what I prefer personally, and I find that peaceful.
And that gives you peace. The key to peace.
For me, it's like once I got connected to God, that's when I really found peace.
When you got connected with God.
Yes.
What do you mean? How did that? What was that connection, and what peace did it give you? It's like newspaper reported, right? So you said I was somewhat anxious in life, or I was somewhat disturbed or uneasy or not feeling complete. Then when I got connected with God, then I became peaceful. I mean, that means you plugged in the wall, or what do you mean? Why was that?
Because I found that, there is so much to life and so much to understanding God. Life is not just about what we are doing.
And what do you experience now? You're in a state of, you're experiencing some state of peace now.
Yes.
So what is the difference between the present state of your existence or experience and the prior state where you weren't peaceful, or at least as much as you'd like to be?
Prior to this, my life was like I had so many insecurities and fears.
Mm.
I was worried about the future, and I was worried about every small thing. And right now, since I have, I'm completely dependent on God, I don't really have to do anything. I just have to pray and I have to do my duties, and everything is like taking its shape.
This is a point. That last few sentences, you got to the actual point. And Devesh, he introduced the idea of bhakti. And so Prabhupada, he speaks in Bhagavad Gita. Everyone's heard of Bhagavad Gita. In chapter 5. Verse 29. And he gave numerous lectures during his preaching campaign that this is the formula to peace. Because at that time when he was preaching, parts of the world were affected by the Vietnam War, some countries, France, America, a few countries, England was also involved, connected with America. Not every country, but it wasn't really World War, but the Vietnam War. And at least where Prabhupada was preaching in America, everyone was peace marches, peace demonstrations, peace now. And they had special mudras, right? They say, peace, peace, brother, peace, brother. This is the mood of the 60s, in my generation, when we grew up. I went to college, first year in college, 1969. So the war was going on full speed, Vietnam War. So Prabhupada said, this is the peace formula, chapter 5 of the Gita, verse 29. Bhoktaram yagatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram sriram sarvabhutanam gyatvam mam shantam richati. And this verse, Prabhupada gives his translation. It gives three. It explains three features of Bhagavan, three features of the Absolute Truth, three features of God. Bhoktaram, you've heard this bhokta, this word is similar in Hindi. Bhokta, bogi, bogi, the enjoyer. Oh, he's a bogi. He's a bogi, rogi. Too much bogi, then what happens? Rogue.
Too much rogi.
Too much rogi. And then you renounce, you become a vairagi, and then you become a yogi. So bogi, then rogi, then yogi. Like here, these pandas in Vrindavan and Radhakund, they say, Abhi Tapeshwari. Tapeshwari. You become a controller of tap. Big yogi, mystic yogi, so much heavy austerity. Abhi Tapeshwari, Bhavishya Rajeshwari. So if you do a lot of austerity in this life, then Bhavishya Janam, future life, you become Rajeshwari. You become a king. You become a very wealthy, opulent whole kingdom, an emperor. And then you live it up, you become a bogi. And you enjoy your senses to the hilt. And then the next life, Narakeshwari. Narak. I think you know this in Hindi. Narak means you become a ruler of hell. As Satan said, I would rather reign in hell than serve in heaven. This is in the Bible. Satan, the devil. So they say, Tapeshwari, Rajeshwari, Narakeshwari. So this is the bogi. So Krishna is saying, a person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the supreme lord of all planets and demigods, and the well-wisher and friend of all living entities, he attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. So this is, I made some notes here, that this is the secret to having a peaceful life, to understand that there is somebody, I have what the Christians say, a guardian angel. Of course, you don't come from Christian tradition. But they say, oh, there's a guardian angel above my shoulder looking out after me. There's some good spirits. There's some good kindred spirits or some friendly beings watching out over me. And so this, the devotee, he always has this conviction. I think we could hear in Barsha's voice more than the words that she used to state her idea. We heard the tone of her voice. We have such a thing as a commanding tone, a begging tone, an ordering tone, a loving tone. This tone, like we say, like, get out of here! That's quite aggressive and commanding. But if the husband says, oh, can you go now for a few minutes? Can you leave? I have to do something. And whatever. So there's different tone. So in our tone of our voice, we could understand, we could hear this conviction coming out. There was some vishwas, belief, that yes, there is a God above me. So this is what I was writing here, that the controller of everything, because the verse is saying, Sarva Loka Maheshwara. Mahesh. We usually say Mahesh means Shiva. Maha-ish. Maha-ish. Ish means controller. Maha means great. Mahesh. Shiva, Mahesh, Brahm, and Vishnu, the controller and the creator and the maintainer, or you can say the destroyer. Usually Mahesh is the destroyer. So he's saying, Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, Krishna is saying in Gita, if you understand this, that I control every planet, every single planet, Sarvalok, this is a lok, this is Mrityulok. The name of this planet is called, this is Bhulok or Mrityulok. There's Bhuvarlok, there's Janalok, Maharlok, Tapalok, Swagalok, this is Mrityulok, or Martya, Martyaloka, the planet of Haribol, the planet of death. You're born and you die, and again born and again die. This is the cycle in this conditioned life. So Krishna is saying, I am the controller. So the note is saying here, I'm saying, that one has... he has a conviction that the controller of everything is friendly to me. Because Krishna is saying, I am the controller. Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. Oh, I get scared. You're the controller. You're the general. You're the dictator. You're the emperor. But then the next line he says, Suridam. Suridam. Surita means affectionate controller, loving controller. Surit. Suridam Sarvabhutanam. I am controlling all the planets. I am the supreme controller, but I'm friendly. I'm very friendly. Surit. We have different words for friend. What are some words for friend in Hindi? Mitra, right? Mitra means friend. Is it right? And then we have Bandhu. Bandhu means friend. But Surit, Surid, or Surit also means friend. It means bosom friend, heart-to-heart friend. So a devotee, he has the conviction, the firm belief, unflinching trust. Conviction means unflinching trust, firm belief that Bhagavan, Sri Krishna, God, the Absolute Truth, Vishnu, Ram, whatever name you wish to use, the Supreme Lord, He is controlling everything and He's friendly to me. He's my friend. He's Dinabandhu. We say, oh, He's Dinabandhu. He's a friend of the poor. Poor means ignorant. Poor means impoverished. Poor means lost. Poor means without a friend. There's many meanings of poor. But Krishna is a friend of everyone. So if one has this conviction, this will give peace in our heart. We should not be disturbed in any situation. Because we should always remember, I am represented in a higher quarter. On this plane of friends and enemies, oh, today he's my friend. Oh, he's my best friend. Then tomorrow, oh, he ran away with my wife. Haribo, best friend. It happens. You know that. You've heard. I'm not making it up. So today, best friend, tomorrow, enemy. This is a planet of duality. What goes up must come down. For every action, we all studied in grammar school. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. You push, then I push. You push me, I push you back. You push too far, then I'll push you back too far. So, but the devotee, he knows that I'm represented up there, beyond this plane. This person may insult me over here, this person may reject me or accept me, or defame me, or do me wrong, but on that side, on the higher side, in the higher quarter, Bhagavan is my friend, a supreme loving friend. So in every circumstance we face gives us an opportunity to approach the truth. Because if we have the conviction that in the higher quarter is Bhagavan, my friend, Krishna, Damodar, Dinabandhu, my friend, Madhav, Shamsundar, Ganasham, he is there for me. And any circumstance that happens to me, no matter what it is, it may look like a setback, it may look like a promotion, it may look like suffering, it may look like sickness, it may look like good health. But every opportunity is an opportunity for me to approach the truth. And the truth is my friend. This is such a reassuring realization. This is Vigyan. Vigyan means knowledge backed by realization. There's knowledge called practical knowledge. We say theoretical. We say theoretical knowledge and practical knowledge. You read a chemistry book, all these chemicals come together. When they come together, they make a gas. It's a theory. Then you go in the laboratory, you combine this chemical and that chemical, all of a sudden, whoosh, big gas comes out. Big smoke and stinking. Whoa. This is practical. Practical knowledge. So Gyan is theoretical. Tattva, truth, substance. And Vigyan is realization. So a devotee realizes this. So peace means, what does peace mean? Another meaning, that there's no obstacles to our devotional service. So the devotee, he thinks, okay, anything can happen to me, but don't let my service be interrupted. This will make me unpeaceful. But any disturbance to my material body, any disturbance to my material mind, or my environment, or my circumstance, I'm peaceful. Okay, Krishna's arranging this. But if there's some disturbance to my service, if I can't render service to Krishna and make Him pleased and give Him satisfaction, then I become ashanti. I become unhappy. Not peaceful. I become disturbed. So, of course, this term peace is a relative term. I was thinking of an analogy. If someone is a kshatriya or a fighter, a warrior. He what is his meaning of peace? He feels peaceful if he has an opportunity to fight. Like Bhima.
To win.
Yeah, to win, but to have a challenge. If he's sitting around, because you see in Mahabharata, there's a story of Bhima. Sometimes Bhima was sitting around talking with Arjuna. And he said, what is this? I have all these big muscles, and I have so much power, and so many mantras I know, but no one's coming. No one's coming, everything's peaceful now. Now Yudhisthira has won the war, and now we're back in the power. We have our empire. But I'm very disturbed. I'm very disturbed. Oh, Bhima, what's wrong? There's no one to fight with. Oh, I'm just so disturbed. So for the Kshatriya, for the warrior, the true-blooded warrior, he feels peaceful if he has an opportunity to fight someone. Whereas, so you can see how peace itself is a relative term. It's related to this individual and the circumstance. But if you're minding your own business and you're not interrupting anyone or fighting anyone, you feel peaceful. But someone comes up and tries to pick a fight with you. Hey, Barsha, your hair is looking stupid. Oh yeah, what do you mean? So then you get disturbed. Then you lose your peace. A fight will cause you to lose your peace. But for a Kshatriya, for a warrior, if he has an opportunity to fight, that will make him peaceful. Oh, I feel very peaceful. I can do my service. My service is fighting. So if he finds no fight, he becomes unhappy and disturbed. So peace is progressive. We take risk, we take trouble and difficulty to please Krishna. Another meaning of peace is anand. We usually say ananda, but in Hindi they say anand. Anand. No A. Ananda. Bliss. Peace means bliss. I think someone was saying that. You were saying that.
I meant in the beginning when I said happiness.
Yeah, happiness. So peace means that. So the negative definition of peace, you can say not really positive, is peace means free from disturbance. And then basically, there's no disturbances in my life. Like, if you're sailing a boat somewhere across the ocean, and the winds are good, and the water is, there's not many waves, and so you're making good progress, everyone's on the boat, they're feeling peaceful, no one's getting seasick, and the sky is blue. So you say, peaceful sailing. They say like this, peaceful sailing. Good wind behind our sails, no choppy water, no opposing winds. But then there's a tufan, or a hurricane. Then, it's very difficult. Oh, it's, everyone's holding on, throwing up here and there. So there's no peace. And then when the storm abides, and then again the tranquil situation, everything's peaceful, then everyone says, it's peaceful now. So this is a general meaning, free from disturbance. But that's negative. But the ultimate definition of peace is ecstasy. So peace means dynamic action for the satisfaction of Krishna. This is an interesting definition of peace. Usually the materialistic people say peace means free from disturbance. Just like a rock. Shanti. And you go to meditation classes. They have meditation classes in the West and also in India. Because people, they advertise, want to be peaceful, attend our class. They say, now, just relax. Relax. Let go of all your cares. Don't think of anything. Don't worry about any. Let go of all your worries. Just relax. Deeply breathe. And then like this. Then afterwards people say, I feel so peaceful. And even sometimes people fall asleep. So then after that meditation, so-called meditation, then they say, it's very nice. It's a very nice meditation. I feel so relaxed, so peaceful, free from all disturbance. So this is the general. It's kind of negative. I'm not being harassed by disturbances, so I'm peaceful. But we have a different definition, as I mentioned. Peace means ecstasy. Peace means dynamic action for the pleasure and satisfaction of God. So you may see a devotee running around, like, all over the place. You say, are you peaceful? Yes, I'm very peaceful. Well, you don't look very peaceful. You're throwing everything here and there, jumping up and down. you look so disturbed. No, I'm very peaceful because everything I'm doing is for the pleasure of Krishna. I'm doing all this activity and I don't feel any disturbance. My mind, I'm happy, I'm peaceful. I feel blissful. This makes me blissful to run around crazy, to organize this Rath Yatra. I haven't slept for days, and I'm getting all the permits, and I'm arranging for the boat, for the prasad, and for the parade, and everything, and the police, and the stage, and the pandal, and everything, and the invitations, and the arrangements for the devotees to stay, and their feeding, fooding, everything. But I'm peaceful. I'm not disturbed. I'm not angry. I'm not angry with myself. I'm not angry with anyone. But I'm very much active. This is an interesting consideration. So peace means connecting everything, connection with ecstasy and with Anand. This kind of peace, this ecstatic and dynamic peace, is only possible in Krishna's loving service. Hare Krishna. Since you're both married, because she said she was bringing some friends, I didn't know whether they'd be married or not. Everyone here is actually married or about to marry or whatever. So there's something funny?
No.
Oh. I don't want to miss.
She's just looking at me and smiling.
Oh, because you're you've been doing this for years. Gopis are always communicating by eyes and giving different messages about Krishna and then sharing different private jokes. And then Krishna's wondering, what did she say through her eyes to that gopi? And why are these two gopis laughing? And then I don't know why they're laughing. So this is going on even in the spiritual world. There's so much communication by the eyes. This is a very gross plane, this material world that we're living in. So everything has to be spoken very clearly, especially in Kali Yuga. If a wife or a husband doesn't tell verbally that I love you so many times in a month, then the wife or husband thinks, oh, maybe he doesn't care for me anymore. But we have one book called Prem Samput by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. He's describing the nature of Krishna Prem, dynamic spiritual love. And he said, if someone speaks out the words of their love, that means that the fire of love is extinguished by those words. You have a fire like birthday cake. They light, of course it's kind of moochy, and people blow on the candles. They have these candles and go, whoosh. So with that breath, whoosh, then those birthday candles are extinguished. They burn no more. So that breath, it takes breath to speak. So when you speak, oh, I love you, then that breath that one uses to speak those words, I love you, blows out the fire of love, true love in the heart. So he says, true love is extinguished by the words one says to express it. Because true love doesn't need to be expressed through words. It's expressed through the eyes, through actions, or eye movements, or just love is there in the eyes, and then through the actions. So this is told in Prem Samput. Of course, we're not on that level of transcendence. But Radha and Krishna, they never, although they love each other so dearly and absolutely and completely, and they're inseparable from one another, they never once in the history of their relationship did they ever say, oh, Krishna, I love you so much. As we often say, I love you so much, I cannot live without you, you're my everything. These are the stock mantras. They're in every language, French, English, Hindi. I love you so much. I love you more than anyone or anything. And you are my everything. Oh, then the last one. This is the clincher. I cannot live without you. This is the greatest humor of all. And everyone's so bewildered by Cupid or cupidity, this lust or Kamdev, that everyone laps it up. They love it. Men love to hear it. Women love to hear it. And it's all a grand illusion. Because if someone uses logic or a touch of intelligence, of course at that time there's no logic functioning and there's no intelligence functioning in those tender moments of intimacy. But if one by chance was a little bit logical or applied a little bit of intelligence, he would think, wait a minute, I was 26 years old and I got married to this person. And somehow he's also 26. And he lived for 26 years without me. He breathed, and he slept, and he ate, and he went to school, and he got a degree, and he got a job. He's done so many things without me. Not even I wasn't part of his life for 1 second. So how is it now that I'm his everything? He can't live without me. Hey, wait a minute. I think you're lying. This is not true what you're saying. You have lived. You've lived 26 years without me. And if I die tomorrow, you're going to die? You're going to jump go down to the cremation electric oven and jump in the oven with me? With my dead body when they burn me up? Well, no way, baby. Life goes on. Bye-bye. Ta-ta. But at any rate, we pass these mantras back and forth. But at any rate, this is a phase of life. And throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are many stories, Puranic stories. This is called Bhagavat Puran. Puran means ancient histories. There's histories of great rishis and great kings and great ladies and gentlemen, devotees and of Shiva, devotees of Brahma, devotees of Shakti or Ma, Durga, and of course devotees of Krishna. The Bhagavad Puran mostly focuses on Krishna devotees, although there are also non-devotees, agnostics there, Gnostics are there, Gnostic, Pashandis, atheists, all different characters are there with their stories, and their beliefs are contained in Bhagavad Puran. On this third canto of Bhagavatam, there's the story about Kashyapa Muni and his wife Diti. There's Diti and Aditi, so he had two wives. And from Diti came so many personalities, and Aditi. So they were married, he was a rishi, and they were married. And there's a lot of discussion about married life and the life of and their exchanges and the purports and the verses. So this is from the third canto of Bhagavatam, chapter 14, this is text 16. And this particular section is a dialogue between the wife and the husband. The wife is saying that she's actually a little bit lusty right at this juncture, and she's saying that I want a child. And he was, at the time, the husband was meditating. He was absorbed in samadhi. He's a great rishi. But he's married, grihastha. He's called Maharshi. He's a great rishi, but he's also married. Great Vishnu Bhakta. And so she was like, hey, come on, give up, stop your samadhi. I want to enjoy with you. And then he said, and he had some dialogue with her about position of women and this and that. And then but he told her, he said, this is not a good time, it's evening time. It's Kala Desham Pachar. Everything has its time, everything has its place, everything has its circumstance to be properly performed to get the best result. So he said, relax, be cool, wait till auspicious time. And she was a little bit pushy. So that's kind of the setting. It's very interesting. So there's romance, and Bhagavatam has romance and all kinds of things in it. It's very exciting. So he says, oh, afflicted one. Because she's, at least at this juncture, she's afflicted by lust. Of course, he can also become, men become afflicted by lust, and so do women. But in this particular story, at this juncture, she's afflicted or harassed by intense lusty desires. He says, I shall gratify whatever desire is dear to you. For who else but you is the source of the three perfections of liberation? So Dharmarth, it's called Dharmarth and Kam. It's Chatur Purushartha. Chatur Purushart. There's four objectives in the human life. Dharmart, Kam, Moksh. Religiosity is one objective, aim and objective of life, to be religious. Another aim and objective of life is wealth, economic development, money, the fame that it brings, the prestige that it brings, the power, facility, enjoyment, whatever it brings, that's called art. That's an object of life, an object, a goal of life. Another goal of life is simply enjoy. With money, without money, big bar of steel, it's called kam, dharmart kam. That's it. And some people, that's That is their motto of life. That's their entire philosophy. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you die. Beg, borrow, steal, eat food cooked in ghee. This is Charvak Muni. Charvak Muni lived about, I think, 2,000 years ago or something. He was preaching this philosophy, which is very popular nowadays. The fourth objective of life is moksha, mukti, liberation, swarga mukti, higher enjoyment, variety of enjoyment on the heavenly planets, like Indraloka, or Vaikuntha mukti, paravyam, spiritual sky, or to go to Goloka Vrindavan, that's prema mukti, serve Radha and Krishna and Braj. So this is a fourth objective, aim and objective of human life. So he's saying, with a wife like you, you are the source of the three perfections. He's speaking of this, these perfections. You give me religiosity, because it's a religious marriage, and artha, and then kam. The three perfections of liberation are religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification. For a conditioned soul, that means one who's us, we are in this, we are conditioned by birth and death. We are in a conditional situation. For a conditioned soul, or for the husband, the wife is considered to be the source of liberation. That's an interesting idea. The wife is a source of liberation. Because she offers her service to the husband for his ultimate liberation. Conditional material existence is based on sense gratification. And if someone has the good fortune to get a good wife, he is helped by the wife in all respects. If one is disturbed in his conditional life, he becomes more and more entangled in material contamination. In other words, if a single man, if he's disturbed by lusty desires, he wants sex life or sex enjoyment, and he doesn't accept the proper rituals of marriage and be somewhat controlled and by marriage, and he'll go here and there in an unrestricted way, in a whimsical way, and maybe pollute so many chaste women or give unwanted children here and there. It can be a great problem in society. But if he's properly married to a religious wife or a dutiful wife, then he can be somewhat controlled. And then his lower tendencies can become modified and purified. And then if she has a dharma patni, a religious wife, then he can get great blessings and fortune in his life. A faithful wife is supposed to cooperate with her husband in fulfilling all material desires so that the husband then can become comfortable, and usually that's where it stops. The wife's husband says, look, Prabhupada says in his books, you should cooperate with me and make me comfortable. So I'd be comfortable if you do this and this and that. But then she says, wait a minute, you forgot the last part of the sentence. And execute spiritual activities for the perfection of life. So it's kind of like, keep your cake and have it, eat your cake and have it too. All right, you have your sense gratification in a religious way, guided by dharma shastras, in a cooperative way, husband and wife. But the aim and objective of that ashram, of that position, Grihastha ashram, is liberation, self-realization, God-realization. So if it's only comfortable, okay, make me comfortable, but then she says, well, what about our spiritual activities? Oh, forget about it, you do that stuff. I'm not interested. This is not the full picture. The full picture is husband should satisfy the wife, wife should satisfy the husband, and they both should work together for emancipation. Spiritual liberation. They cooperate on both levels, on material level and spiritual level. Then it's very helpful for both, especially the husband and also the wife. If, however, the husband is progressive in spiritual advancement, The wife undoubtedly shares in his activities, and thus both the wife and the husband profit in spiritual perfection. So the implication what Prabhupada was saying is that the wife was the first point he was saying, the wife is religious, she's a Dharma Patni. She's religious due to her Prarabdha karma, or due to her family upbringing or her own karma. She's a religious person. So she kind of tempers the husband, who may be not religious or religious at all. So she points him in the right direction. So she's a blessing for him. And she'll help him move on the proper path of human life. Human life is meant for God realization and ultimate perfection, eternal life of bliss and knowledge in the spiritual world. However, if she's fortunate, has a dharmapati, because a dharmapati is called gurupati. But simply to have a man that's called your husband, if he is not heavy with surrender, and he's not heavy with spiritual knowledge, and not heavy with faith in God, then he's not guru. And the word guru means heavy. Lagu and guru. Lagu means light. Lagu. L-A-G-H-U. Means light, feather light. But guru means heavy. So if husband is actually spiritually minded, religiously minded, then he's first of all dharmapati, and he's gurupati. He is a guru. So Prabhupada is mentioning that here. He's saying, however, so this is one situation he explained, that the wife is religious, the husband not so, or maybe mildly, when she influences him by pointing him in the right direction. And then, however, if she's lucky and the husband is a spiritualist and he's progressive and interested in progressing in spiritual advancement, then the wife, she gets double benefit because she's already doing her spiritual pujas and prayers and her mantra chanting and bhakti, and that's giving her individual benefit. But in Shastras it says that if someone is chaste and following their dharmapati and the gurupati, they get 50% benefit from him also. We'll just see how much fortune the wife can get. So then sometimes the question is raised, well, wait a minute, if I make $100, she gets 50 and I only get 50. This is a bad deal. I worked hard and I got the 100 and she just immediately scooped off 50 bucks. Or you say 50 pounds. So no, it's not like that. You get your full 50 pounds and she gets 25, she gets half, but you don't lose. This is arrangement, God's special banking. God has a good banking system. You get your full merit. You get your full benefit of your sukriti or punya, your spiritual activities, your divya sukriti. And the wife gets half. So it's you get your 50 and she gets 25 just by being chaste. And that's the keynote. If she's not chaste, she's bankrupt. You're doing your spiritual activities, but if she's not chaste, then she only gets her own spiritual benefits, but nothing from your account. So this way, both a husband and a wife profit in spiritual perfection. Prabhupada uses this word, profit. It is essential, therefore, that girls as well as boys be trained to discharge spiritual duties, so at the time of cooperation, both will be benefited. So in other words, Prabhupada is saying that in their youth, and when they're growing up, young boy, young girl, they should be trained by their parents in spiritual activities, reading Gita Pat every day, reading Bhagavatam, going to the temple, chanting Maha Mantra, doing some puja, offering the food with Tulsi, the basic fundamentals of bhakti, for example, bhakti sadhan. And then if they're trained like that, then when they come together in marriage, the boy's already been trained like that, and the girl's been trained like that, so their mutual cooperation will go on very quickly and easily together. So Prabhupada is saying, therefore it's so essential that they're trained. The training of the boy is called brahmacharya, and the training of the girl is chastity. A faithful wife and spiritually trained brahmachari are a good combination for advancement of the human mission. So he's saying that the whole human society can be benefited by proper training, chastity and brahmacharya. This is the ideal that Prabhupada is preaching. So we can hear about the ideal and see how we can relate to that. Application is the hard part. As we said, gyan and vigyan, theory and practice. So theoretically, even the Bible has that concept. They have the theory, yes, we should be good, but then they have the practicality. And the phrase is, The soul is willing, but the flesh is weak. So this, the theory is, yes, my soul, I'm a soul, okay, I'm a soul, and I'm willing to serve God, and I'm willing to be a good Christian, I really want to be, but my flesh, my body, my flesh, my months, you say months, 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 is my flesh is weak, I have so much greed inside of me, so much lust inside of me, so much envy, so it's pushing me and forcing me to act against my inner self, against my better self, against my soul. Therefore, in the Bible it says, the soul is willing, oh my God, oh my Lord, oh Father, you understand, my soul is willing, but my flesh is weak. I'm really weak. So therefore, what to do? How to solve this problem, this dilemma? Surrender, Sharanagati. Sharanagati, Prabhu. Oh Prabhu, oh my Lord, you're so powerful, you're so great. Without your help, I'm finished. I can't move an inch. I can't go on. I need your help. You see, every time I try to stand up, I fall down. Every time I try to go forward, I get kicked back. I take 10 steps forward, and I get kicked back 20 by my material desires, by my greed, my anger, my lust. So please, you have to do something. You have to pick me up and fly me over these difficulties. Fly me over these hurdles and obstacles. Make me a champion. Make me successful. Yamahuratmano yardam shreyas kamas yamanani yasyam swaduram adyasya pummam charati vijvaraha. And Kasya is saying to Diti, O respectful one, very nice, he's saying, manini, man, man also means respect. Amanina manidena kirtaniya sadhari. So this, see the bhav. It's called the bhav. See the husband's bhav. He's a rishi, Kasyap Muni. Some people are descendants. Like you say, what is your gotra? You ever heard any Indian say, what is your gotra? You say, Kasyap. You ever heard this? Anyone here, Kasyap? Anyone? You're Kasyap. This is your great, great, great grandfather. Chapter 14. Third canto. Your descendant, your blood is his blood and her blood, Diti. Or Aditi, I don't know which one. He had some different wives. But his blood is there. It's a wonderful honor. It's a great thing. So just see his bhav towards his wife. He says, hey, you wife, you just that. Oh, manini. Oh, respectful one. You can imagine, he's practically folding his hands before his wife. He's a great rishi, so much mystic power, so much knowledge, detachment, many, many disciples. He's a prajapati, Kashyap, prajapati. He's a progenitor of the human society. He meets millions of people in India, Kashyap Gotra. Prolific. This is his service to Lord Brahma. Propagate human species, human beings. But yet he's standing with folded hands, offering respect to his wife. Oh, manini, oh, respectful one. He's preaching, he's saying, Shreyas kamasya manani sadura madhyasa. He says, a wife is so helpful that she is called the better half of a man's body. Because of her sharing in all auspicious activities. It says Atmano Ardam. I say Arda. Arda Chandra. So this is interesting because we have this phrase even now, year 2008. Oh, my better half. Oh, here comes my wife. Oh, here comes your better half, Devesh. They say like this sometimes. Oh, here comes your better half. You've heard this expression? That the wife is the better half, right? Husband, he's a bad half. Husband is the bad half, but wife is the better half. So now we can understand. This phrase started with Kasyap Muni, glorifying his wife. If you're wondering who started this phrase, it's from the Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, chapter 14, verse 20. He says, Atmana Ardham. Atma means body, Atma means soul, Atma means mind. He said, you're half my Atma. You're half my Atma. Why? Because you share in all auspicious activities. And then Kasyap continues, a man can move without anxiety, entrusting all responsibilities to his wife. Charity. Pumamsh charity vijwaraha. Vijwara. Jwara. Jwara means fire. Jwara. It also means anxiety. Jwara. So vi. Vi means vigata. Vi means vigata. Vigata means without, in the absence of. In the absence of jwara. Jwara means anxiety. In Hindi, same? No. Something. Something. So this is, and charity means move. Chara chara. He can move. So this is quite apropos. It's quite appropriate. Because the man, we see in many households, at least traditionally, the man, what he'd be Agarwal, Gupta, whatever, he'd go to his shop, he'd make the money, and he'd come home and he'd just give the money to the wife and say, look, manage everything. My duty is to sell the goods and make the profit. You run the household. You pay the bills. All I want is I want my meals on time. I want my meals on time. I want the house clean. I want my clothes ironed and pressed. And I want you to look fresh and cute and sweet and all the time. And then at night, we'll figure out what we do at night. And then I'll do my part. So the husband, he does a little part. He actually, and they say that the wife is the empress of the family. She's the empress. Without her, nothing goes on. She's the pivot. The pivot of the successful family is a successful wife. If the wife is haywire, the whole family is haywire. She is the hub. She is the hub of the wheel of the house. You take away the axle, the hub, the car crashes. So the husband, all he does, he goes, gets the money and hands it to the wife, and then she does everything. She pays all the bills, she reminds him, oh, you have to take the car in for changing the oil. Oh, she has everything in her mind. Car maintenance, oh, it's time to make the payments. Oh, those stocks are matured now, you should sell those, and those bonds are, she has everything on her head, the finances, the family, the education, the school. And then what to speak of the health, everything. Oh, it's time for your checkup. She's the governess of the whole family. So he's saying that a man can move without anxiety, entrusting all responsibilities to his wife. So this is his verse. It's very nice. His understanding. He's completely realized soul, explaining the facts and details of proper married life. So what is Prabhupada's purport? By the rules and laws of the Vedas, Vedic injunction, the wife is accepted as the better half of a man's body because she is supposed to be, quote unquote, supposed to be, responsible for discharging half of the duties of the husband. A family man has a responsibility to perform five kinds of sacrifices called pancha yajna, in order to get relief from all kinds of unavoidable sinful reaction occurred in the course of his affairs. And those pancha yajna, he's supposed to feed guests, and he's supposed to take care of atithis, and also do fire yajna, worship deities, and give in charity. These are the pancha yajnas. Because there's five kinds of sinful activities that everyone engages in, not only men, but even women, but the wife is free because she's assisting the husband and performing these activities, these charity and giving food and serving guests, all these five pancha yajnas. So when we walk on the street, we kill so many insects. When we breathe, we kill so many little insects. So Jains wear some mouthpiece, but they don't, what about their feet? They don't wear a mouthpiece on their feet, a footpiece. And when we grind grains, or we grind, because traditionally we would grind grains, or spices, so many bugs are inside there, they get crushed up and cooked up. And when we wash, there's also microbes in the water. When we're boiling water, they get killed. And breathing, walking. Oh, when we cook with fire, when we light the fire, then so many little bugs get burned up. So this is murder. This is called himsa. Himsa. So if you take a life, then you have to have your life taken. So there has to be some prayaschitta. So these are unavoidable. These are unavoidable sinful activities. Everyone, to live we have to do, we have to walk, we have to cook, we have to clean, we have to wash, we have to grind. So the Vedas say, yes, you're entangled in sin, entangled in pap, But you can do atonement or prayaschitta. So unless you do this pancha yagya on a regular basis, then you'll get this reaction of these sins. This is what's being said here. So the wife helps in all of that. When a man becomes qualitatively like the cats and dogs, in other words, man becomes just like an animal, he forgets his duties in cultivating spiritual values, and thus he accepts his wife as a sense gratificatory agency. Like insurance agency? Your wife, you just opened up a sense gratificatory agency. When the wife is accepted as a sense gratificatory agency, comma, personal beauty is the main consideration. And as soon as there is a break in personal sense gratification, there is disruption or divorce. But when the husband, and that's like the typical modern materialistic, animalistic, godless relationship of today. But when the husband and wife aim at spiritual advancement by cooperating together, then there is no consideration of personal beauty or disruption of the so-called love. In the material world, there is no question of love. Marriage, and of course Prabhupada was married, and he also had 10 children. 5 survived, 4 or 5 died. Marriage is actually a duty performed in mutual cooperation as directed in the authoritative scriptures for spiritual advancement. Therefore, marriage is essential in order to avoid the life of cats and dogs, because cats and dogs are not meant for spiritual enlightenment. Prabhupada has a sense of humor sometimes. Cats and dogs are not meant for God realization. But if we live like them, then we will also not attain God realization. So there's one more verse. I'll read this one. As a fort, it says here, yam ashrit indriyaratin durtayan itarashrame vayam jayema helabir dasyun durga patir yatha. Dasyun, plunderers, Durgapati. Durga means fort commander. As a fort commander very easily conquers invading plunderers by taking shelter of a wife, one can conquer the senses which are unconquerable in the other social orders. So he's saying that, in other words, I mentioned it earlier, this prophet says, without a fixed wife, let's say without a wife that's fixed, whatever that, in other words, not having one wife, a man becomes a debauch of the first order and is a nuisance in society. So the idea, it's like a safety valve. If the woman is chaste and raised in chastity, then she will be pretty much usually attached to her husband. And the husband has such a faithful, chaste wife, and he follows religious principles, and he won't go out and create havoc in society by becoming a woman monger or a womanizer. And these are just some thoughts about that Grihastha life. Which, how many years you're married, you two?
3 years.
They say the people that have been married, people have been married for 10, 15, 20 years. They say it takes about 5 years to get to know someone. Because as you rightly mentioned, if you establish friendship with God, if you have a very tight and clear and compact friendship with Krishna, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, God, then wherever you go, you'll be with your friend. He was in the airport. And then the newspaper reporters came there because the Hare Krishnas were quite newsworthy in those days. Novelty, something new. 1969, 1970. So Swamiji, you've come from India. And so how do you like England? And I think he was there a few days. I interviewed him in London. Prabhupada said, this is like hell. It's on BBC, right? Swamiji was like Gurudev, right? My guru. Swamiji, how do you like England? You know, you've come from India. Now you're in England. How do you find Great Britain? Prabhupada said, actually, this place is like hell. All the devotees were there, sitting there in the room with the news conference, they were laughing. And the guy cleared his throat because he was a proper Englishman, reporter for the BBC. He said, excuse me, Swamiji, what do you mean by that? The guy was almost fainted. The newspaper man almost fainted. He said, Prabhupada said, you see, in hell, it is very dark, and it's very cloudy, and it's very, very clammy and cold and foggy. And this is, so England is like this. So to me, it's like hell. Because I come from India, and India every day, full sunshine. And very nice environment, very healthy. And I take my massage in the sun every day. It's very good for health. But here I can't find 1 minute sun. Prabhupada, really. He was. And then the newspaper, one article came out in the newspaper, it was in Leelamrita, it showed a picture. It says, Swami, because the Prabhupada was preaching to the newspaper person, and he said, so you have any advice to the people of England? And Prabhupada said, yes, the people here, you're living like cats and dogs. The dogs are running on four legs, and you are running on four wheels. You are running on four wheels, Lotus Elan, or whatever, you know, Austin, or whatever kind of cars you have over there, Rover or something. You are running on four wheels, and the dogs are running on four legs. There's no difference. You're living like cats and dogs. So then the article came out, there was a picture that in the London Observer, something like the London Observer, some newspaper, it said, Swami has come to hound us. Swami has come to hound us. Hound is a type of dog. You know, there's some dog they have over there called Hound, H-O-U-N-D. Hound also means, in colloquial language, means to harass someone, harass or disturb someone. Swami has come to hound us. Prabhupada was so, he didn't care about Dale Carnegie. Dale Carnegie wrote many books, How to Win Friends and Influence People. Dale Carnegie, these famous books about business, How to Win Friends. How to Win Friends and Influence People. That's tips for business. Dale Carnegie, it's like success promotion or something like this, back in the 1930s, but they're very popular even today. So Prabhupada, he wasn't about winning friends. He was sadhu. Sadhu means sat dhatu. Sat dhatu, the element of truth. Sat dhatu. Dhatu means element. The basic truth, sat. Sat chit ananda. Sat, truth, God. So sadhu. Sadhu means he cuts illusion and establishes truth. Sat, sat. And he established, sadhu establishes sat, which is God, Bhagavan, Krishna, the absolute truth, and that is called sad-dharma. Sad-dharma. Eternal occupation, eternal duties. Duties and activities in relation to God. Sad-dharma. Everyone talks about, I'm doing my dharma, I'm doing my patni dharma, I'm doing my pati dharma, my grihastha dharma. So many dharmas. Okay, that's relative. That's required. But dharma means that it's there are rules of dharma. There's do's and don'ts, yama niyam. Even if you're doing your patni dharma or pati dharma or sati dharma, there are scriptures, dharma shastras. There's 20 dharma shastras that say, do business like this and don't do like this. And have a family like this and don't do like this. This is punya, this is pap. That's dharma. But the sadhu comes to teach sad-dharma. Sad-dharma. Eternal. Act in such a way to become liberated. Act in such a way to give pleasure to God. to give happiness to Bhagavan. This will sanctify our existence, this will pacify our mind, purify our heart, and fill us with joy. This is Sanatana Dharma, the path of eternity, the path of divinity, and the path of eternal love. Prem Dharma. Gauranga Prem Dharma. Hare Krishna.